When I think back to some of the most profound moments in growing in my business journey, one of them was in Orlando, Florida at the Gaylord Opryland Hotel and Resort there. I just showed up to really one of my first conferences for e-commerce sellers, and I didn't know a soul. Complete strangers there to me. But I knew I wanted to connect and learn more, and there was already a community built around this event, and it was hosted on a Facebook group. So in that Facebook group, Pacifica Event, I made a post that said, the first 6 or 8 people that respond to this post, I'll buy you a steak dinner tonight. So all these complete strangers jumped in, responded, and I said, you know, we'll meet at the steakhouse there at the resort at whatever time it was. So sitting around the table was a bunch of complete strangers to me. But that steak dinner, that opportunity to network and meet other folks within this larger community, helped me meet lifelong friends now that I've been friends with for 10 years. Our families actually vacation together now. Helped me meet future business partners. And I learned a lot of things just sitting around that table that I didn't know about business that fundamentally changed my trajectory to success. Community is important. Community is massively important. My role at Carbon 6 Chief Community Officer is focused around community, but there's also a lot of major brands and products out there that have built communities around their businesses that have fundamentally changed their success. Today, the topic is community, and whether or not you're interested in an educational community or building a community around your physical brand, it's gonna be an important episode. Great information coming. Hope you listen to the end. Here we go. Hey, everybody, and welcome to another episode of the Growth Gear Podcast. I'm your host, Tim Jordan, and today we are talking about community. Now, I live in a community. A lot of you live in communities, but that's not the community I'm talking about. The community I'm talking about specifically relates to entrepreneurism, and it kind of double relates to you if you are a product or a brand seller. There's really two types of communities that apply to us, and today we want to discuss some things that are pertinent to both of those types. So if you're a brand owner and you're trying to develop a brand community or a community around your brand, or if you're an entrepreneur and you want to be engaged or involved with a community to help you level up, preferably you're thinking about both of these. Now, many of us understand the idea of an educational community, right? These are fellow entrepreneurs that we work with, that we learn with, that we kind of jive with and hopefully grow together with. The concept of a brand community is actually a little bit newer. And as I was doing some research before this episode, there were some that obviously made sense in my head. There were some that were new to me. Some of those brands or brands with communities include Apple and Starbucks. And I thought, well, Starbucks has a community? Well, the example they gave was the pumpkin spice latte, right? When that comes out in the fall, Starbucks makes this huge thing around it. They have brand ambassadors. They have chats that pop about it. But what about companies like Harley-Davidson? Harley-Davidson has a massive brand community. All the guys that get together for meetups, the guys that ride together, the guys that meet literally in like clubs at the Harley-Davidson stores. Lego, Airbnb, Sephora, GoPro, these are all brands that have communities. So to talk about this concept of community, I brought in two guests today that are both brand owners and brand builders, and they're also the founders of one of the most prestigious and I believe elite communities in the e-commerce space, the Million Dollar Seller Group. So I want to introduce Ian Sells and Frankie Farina, who are, like I said, the co-founders, the CEO, Ian, and the CMO, Frankie. So welcome, guys.
Man, thanks for having us here.
Stoked to be here. Thanks.
All right. So honest answer, of the brands that I mentioned with communities, which one of those were surprises to you and which one were kind of like duh moments?
No, I think the dumb moment was, I think Harley-Davidson, right? Because when you look at that brand, it's like, that's all you picture when you think of Harley is these groups going out and doing the rides together, right? Certainly the pumpkin spice latte was a surprise.
So as we jump into this, I'm going to pick both of your brains on a lot of these things. And I realize this is the first episode we've done on this podcast with 3 guests. So for those of you listening, bear with us as we try to get our cadence and figure this out. And hopefully I'll incite some sort of riot and get these guys arguing with each other and extract some nuggets that way. But if you guys would, one of you jump in and talk a little bit about the genesis of the MDS group, kind of how that idea got started, and maybe the first year of that group, like what did it look like assuming that you had no idea it would turn into what it is today?
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, it started back when I was just building my own brand on Amazon and, you know, finding people on the internet, basically, that were kind of doing the same thing as me. You know, stumbled across a lot of people who are my age or whatnot, you know, going to China solo, things like that. And we were, you know, just sharing ideas because there was no roadmap for how to sell on Amazon, right? There was no guidebooks, and there was, you know, some info being sold and shared as courses and stuff. But from my previous background, I was like not trying to reinvent the wheel, and I wasn't trying to, you know, I was trying to stay ahead of the curve essentially. So I was able to find people in different Facebook groups that I was chatting with and say, hey, join my group. You know, we're talking high level stuff. These are the people who I'm verifying that they're actually sellers. They've been selling for a certain amount of time and they have reached a certain level of sales. And so that's kind of how the community started. It's just a community. It wasn't a business, wasn't a model. It was really just a network that I could like rely on. And, you know, it made going to China more fun because I, you know, 6 years ago had friends to hang out with and have dinner with when I was there by myself for 3 weeks. Trying to figure out how to bring a new product into market.
Frankie, I know that you're leading a lot of the charge on recruiting and on kind of development of the community now. Give me like the 30-second version of what MDS is now. Talk about size a little bit, talk about structure. Just for context for the listeners, what is MDS today?
Sure. So we're a e-commerce kind of virtual mastermind, let's say, community for sellers that are in e-commerce that predominantly sell on Amazon. The common thread for most of our sellers is Amazon, but e-com in general. And we represent about $8 billion in revenue on Amazon specifically with our 650 members. The curation of this group means that we've created this collective of shared experience that everyone could tap into, because there's likely not a single issue that you'll run into when you sell in e-com and on Amazon that someone else in the group hasn't already been down that road. So there's no reason to reinvent the wheel, right? You just kind of learn from each other. And instead of trying to find the answer yourself.
8 billion is a big number. And all of that is essentially, you know, branded e-commerce sales. When I was looking at the definition of community before we got started, this is what ChatGPT threw out at me. It said a community is people who share common characteristics, interests, or goals, who interact within a particular geographic area or virtual space. And I like that as a kind of as a definition, because when we think of community, we do think of in person, but obviously we live in a world that's virtual, that's digital. The folks that are talking about pumpkin spice latte in the Starbucks community are probably not meeting up in parking lots like the Harley-Davidson guys. And the Harley-Davidson guys would probably much rather meet up in the parking lot of a Harley shop than, you know, chatting on Discord. So I think that the combination of those is important. When I continued to read that definition, I looked up the key elements that ChatGPT lists as important for community. They include things like shared identity, interconnectedness, similar purpose or goal, communication, shared resources, and norms and values. Anything in there that stands out or missing when it comes to the key components of community in your heads?
Sure. I think from a shared value standpoint, I think that's kind of one, it's actually one of our core values, right? It's we're all like-minded and driven. I think that this world, like you kind of nailed it, right? It's virtual more now than it's ever been post-COVID, you know, post-COVID era. So there's so many people who are just kind of operating on their own, kind of maybe not lone wolves because they have a team, but their team is also virtual and they can't talk the same way to their team that they can with other entrepreneurs, right? So, and in your normal day-to-day life, right, where you're surrounded by your friends from college or high school, your neighbors, right? Those are all kind of working professionals, very great, you know, people and jobs, I'm sure, but like you can't have the sort of dialogue that you're really, you know, going to feed off of, like having someone that you can talk to specifically about what you're going through in this journey of, you know, navigating Amazon's newest thing that they're going to throw at you, right? So having that shared identity is really important. And I think that kind of is what resonates really big for a community like ours.
Yeah, I would add to that, like there is a big difference also between like a community for a certain type of thing. So like Harley-Davidson, right? That is a niche community of motorcycle enthusiasts, right? And so if you go to a motorcycle enthusiast community, you're not going to align as well with those people in that room, right? Because they're going to be talking about different types of bikes that you don't ride. Or they might be talking about, you know, dirt biking. So these niche communities are actually really prevalent and actually, you know, bring the community even tighter and closer together because they have such a common thread of the way that they think, the way that they act, what they buy, you know, how they live their lives, right? And so that's where like MDS has become like this community of e-commerce Amazon sellers, not just entrepreneurs in general, because we're all entrepreneurs that were doing this, but we found that niche of e-commerce and Amazon is our real core focus, but in general, e-commerce is what we do. And we're always looking to expand and grow in that way. But we all have similar interests when it comes to, you know, marketing theory, right? How to launch products, you know, what to do. So our network is really tight in that way. And so I think there's levels to communities and being a niche community is really going to probably provide you the most value for your specific role. Now, if we were in the larger space, we might learn more about other things, right? I've been in other communities that are entrepreneur folks like EO and YPO, but I'm with people that, you know, have are owners of businesses, but we have nothing more in common than being founders of businesses, right? They own a pizza, 10 pizza joints or whatnot. So it's really cool to see how community has evolved because, you know, same thing in any big community, whether it's a school or a neighborhood or a church or whatever, like there's going to be subsets of that community that get deeper and deeper.
As I break up this list of key elements, I kind of circled some shared identity, purpose or goal, norms and values. Those are almost like the stabilizing base foundation of this thing. Like that's how you get started. The other thing, shared resources, communication and interconnectedness, almost seems like the facilitators of continuing that community, right? If you're not communicating, if you don't have some sort of connectivity, mechanics, I don't know if that's the right term. And then, you know, being able to share resources, whether that's wisdom, education, support. So it sounds like there's kind of two levels. So for the listeners, what I'd like to do is ask you some questions and get some advice here because our listeners are thinking about how do they build a community? Or they're thinking about, should I be involved in a community? I was just on a call with a new seller who's watched a lot of online content and she wants to build a community around her brand. She also wants to join a community, doesn't even know where to get started, right? Like where is the place that she needs to be? So hoping we can glean some great information. I have no doubt that we will for our listeners here. So I'm just going to start lobbing out some questions and we'll see where it goes. Sounds fair?
Sounds great.
So as we're thinking about communities and the communities that you're building and leveraging your existing community to create growth and some sort of levers that people can pull to continue finding more success, how do you effectively engage with those community members, right? Yourself? Because my understanding with communities is that there has to be some sort of strategy from the top. Otherwise, it's just a bunch of disjointed communication that falls apart, right? So if you're Harley Davidson, you need to be facilitating that community. If you're, you know, MDS leadership, you need to be facilitating some sort of growth. How do you engage with the community members specifically at MDS as opposed to just letting all the members communicate independently, which also happens, right?
Yeah, that's a great question, Tim. And I think it's one where it really makes us different than other groups. We are member-driven and member-led, so I'm not the voice of reason. I'm not the one that's telling everybody how to do things. The members are really the value of the organization, and that's what we lean on. And so we put together like four values that allow our members to align with that. And so that allows them to say, hey, this person doesn't align with our core values. This person, you know, it should be in our group because they do align with our core values, and they are proven, and they have, you know, they will be willing to put the group first, you know, whenever they're talking about things. And so from our standpoint, we put together like frameworks and ways to help organize the content, the resources, the members, and give them more touch points, more ways to connect. And so that's kind of what we do as leadership is not really, you know, being the front and center, but really finding ways to make certain members front and center, whether that's, you know, winning member of the month and getting a prize for, you know, their contributions that month, or we have MVP, you know, most valuable, you know, post or person, right, that contributed something just crazy value, or people that have traveled, you know, across the world to come to one of our, you know, amazing events where we bring together the top minds in the industry, you know, to network and learn and educate each other. So we do a lot to cultivate that. I think Frankie could probably talk about like our chapters, we have squads, other things that we do as an organization to really make sure that these people are getting a ton of value, 10x, 100x what they're, you know, what they're paying to be a part of us, but also getting way more than that personally.
So what are the core values of MDS?
I'll be happy to share those with you. So one of our core values is called give more, get more. So the more that you put into the group, the more you're going to get out of it. That means that the more you show up, the more you help others, the more they're going to be willing to help you, right? You can't just come in and take. What would mom say is another one. So, you know, that's like living with, you know, integrity and understanding that you need to, you know, do things that your mom would be like, I'm proud of you for, not like, hey, you know, you shouldn't be doing those things in class, right? Like-minded and driven is really what connects us all. And that's really like how we are motivated to be successful, want to help others. But we're also like, this is not a back burner thing. We're taking this to the full extent. We put the group first. So that's really where, you know, the members, and these go for like us as leadership and members. So they kind of resonate in both worlds. Group first. So whenever we're doing stuff as a leadership, we're thinking about how that impacts the group, not just like, hey, I'm going to make more money from this. And same with the members. They're like, hey, I'm here to bring value. I'm here to put the group first over my own, you know, monetary benefits or my own personal benefits. And proven and show up our other two, which is basically, you know, with an MDS, we're the, one of the only groups, I think, that you know, has a requirement of doing at least $1 million of revenue to get in our group. So it really sets a standard of the type of person that's in there. You know, we believe that's, you know, somebody that's either a full-time or transitioning to full-time as in the e-commerce space. And then show up, you know, if you say you're going to come to a call, come to that call. If you're going to come to an event, come to an event. You know, if you're going to say, hey, I'm going to jump on a call with a member and help them out, do that, right? Be present when you're doing that, and you'll get more out of the group. So those are, you know, the basics of our core values, and we live by those. Members live by those. And even our partners, you know, that come in, you know, understand those values, and they resonate with everybody. We took a lot of time to put that together.
So Frankie, from an advertising marketing perspective, as you go over these core values with potential community members, which one of those resonates the most initially? And is there one that later resonates more as they've gotten involved with the community, realize, hey, this is actually more important or more impactful than I expected it to be?
I love that, because there is kind of this evolution of like, okay, this makes sense. This is why I'm joining. And then you realize when you're in deep enough in MDS, you're like, holy shit, you know, I didn't realize the impact of this that they were telling me about from the start, but it didn't really resonate until now. Right. And I think, you know, the one that I think, you know, right out of the gates, right, is proven, right? You know, Ian kind of mentioned like there's a barometer, right? You need to do $1 million to join, right? $1 million this day and age is not a lot to do in revenue, but what it does is it filters out a lot of the noise from other, you know, other groups that are out there that maybe, you know, have a lot of kind of entry people kind of trying to figure things out. So the fact that every one of the groups doing $1 million, you know, to do $1 million, you're likely not getting lucky. It's very likely you're good at some aspect of the business, right? Whether that's launching new products, whether that's, you know, PPC or influencer marketing or, you know, listing optimization, the list goes on, right? Maybe you're good at sourcing. So you put all those guys in a room, and going back to the facilitation question you asked prior, right? Like our job, we're not an education platform. We are facilitators, because the beauty is you get these guys and gals in the room who are proven, who are doing, you know, well in some aspect, and you put them in a room together and you kind of get out of the way. You know, you obviously you guide them, you give them some sort of, something to keep them, to start them off. And then the magic happens, just getting out of the way and letting them talk, right? Because they're starting to solve each other's problems, starting to get better. Maybe you're good at influencer marketing, but you're not good at listing optimization. And when you leave the room after that meeting, right? When you're at events or on these virtual calls, you've now leveled up, right? On those other aspects of the business. And I think like further, once you're in the group longer term, I think kind of that like-minded and driven value that we have, you start to realize like, wow, this is my tribe. Like I came here to learn and kind of for my own personal gain to learn the latest strategies or hacks or whatever. But then you realize like, wow, this is actually, you know, this is a reflection of who I am and who I want to be. And you start understanding like, wow, this guy's doing 30 million a year, right? And he's no smarter than I am, right? So I can do this. And people start, you know, kind of coaching others and mentoring others, and you start to break through these kind of barriers of, you know, limiting beliefs. And there's a lot of talk around that within the group, right? We've got sellers that started, you know, sellers who came in doing $2 million a year in revenue, thought that was basically the, you know, that's where they're at. And they're happy with that number. And, you know, they'll do $400 million this year because they surrounded themselves with entrepreneurs of this caliber that were doing things that they didn't even think were possible. And they just went and did it. So
whether our listeners are thinking about becoming, you know, part of an educational community, forming an educational community or forming a brand community, how should they measure the KPIs of success? You know, what are the components of, the success metrics that people should be looking at to determine if this is a success or failure?
I would say, you know, they definitely need to look at themselves, right? Because whenever you go into a room or a community, like the KPI is, can I go talk to enough people to get my value out of this? Can I open myself up? Can I put my concerns away and go and approach this group of people and ask, hey, what do you guys do? How, you know, you have to have value that you have something to offer. You may not know what it is, but if you can figure out ways to communicate and be, you know, more confident. So I think the KPI is, can I do this? And you get what you put in. That's kind of like our give more, get more. So if you just come in, you're like, hey, I'm the best seller in the world. I don't need anybody's stuff, but I'm just checking this out. You're probably not going to be a good value of the group and you're probably not going to fit in. If you come in there and you're like, well, you know, how can I help others? What can I find? What can I do to support, you know, others and then gain from that and gain connection and resources and stuff like that. That's really a one great KPI. I mean, financially, you're driven, you know, if one, when you're doing $1 million or $10 million in revenue, you know, one little trick that you learn every month can literally pay back your entire investment in an event, in a, you know, a community, whatever it is that you're paying for, right? Because saving a penny or 10 cents per unit or, you know, reducing your cost by 1% is going to actually pay dividends, you know, and compound over time. So, you know, you don't know what you don't know. And, you know, having the people that are cocky and have that confidence that they just know everything, they usually, you know, end up suffering and they're missing out on so much opportunity than just open and like honest and authentic. And so I think the KPI is really like internal. I guess it's an interesting question because we don't really measure that, but we do award people that, you know, have grown their business since coming in the group and all that good stuff. But I think like the way I see it is like people coming out of their comfort zone and we try to push members to do so. And that's where they get the breakthrough, the value, and they start to build those connections.
It's also kind of, it's just really critical to, you know, lean on certain people within the group early that, you know, just kind of fit that mold and let them kind of serve as leaders within the community. Cause like at the end of the day, like myself, Ian and Eugene, our third partner, like we're not the ones who built this, right? It's our members. And we really leaned on so many of those and rewarded them, right? We gave them, you know, like sent them, you know, whatever, like awards and gifts and call outs and that kind of stuff. And we just had this thing where everyone wanted, they had this desire to just help and contribute and add value where they could. And that's really hard to replicate. It's really hard to get right. And I think part of the other thing too, is we were very methodical with our growth. Like we only added, you know, 8 to 10 members a month. Like we had them kind of assimilate or integrate into the community with a value add post and an introduction that was meant to like lead with value. We didn't want the group ever to feel like, to our existing members and our legacy members, like a foreign place. Like, where is this? Like, I don't recognize these faces here, right? So we're very intentional about how we add people and what we expect of them. And we, you know, we do a good job of onboarding them and providing, you know, resources for them to get the most out of the group. But at the end of the day, like we're just, it's not a cash grab. We're not trying to add 50 people, you know, in a given month, right? We just want to make sure that we're adding just enough to not, you know, make it feel like it's not a familiar place to the legacy members who are really the core of the entire group.
So I've heard a lot of stuff that I have follow-up questions on. One is this idea of fostering internal leadership, right? Or maybe not individual internal leadership, but like hive leadership, like let everybody kind of run this thing, which is, I think, empowering because when we think of, you know, everything that we have to do to run a successful brand, it's a lot and we have limited bandwidth. So for me, the idea of building a brand community seems daunting because I would have envisioned that I would have to take the leadership on this. But what you're saying is, you know, leadership doesn't mean doing all the work. Leadership doesn't mean, you know, you're having to carry all the weight. What you're doing is facilitating an environment where other people can take responsibility and start contributing, and you don't have to do everything yourself. As we were sitting here talking, I was Googling some more on my laptop, and I came across a Harvard Business Review article that talks specifically about the Harley-Davidson community, right? And it's talking about myths and realities. One of the myths is that opinion leaders build strong communities. What they're saying the reality is that communities are strongest when everybody plays a role. So in an entrepreneurial community, that's tough because a lot of us are type A, we're go-getters. We want to be helpful, and sometimes, you know, we think that our way is the best way. How do you facilitate an environment where maybe the people that see themselves as natural leaders or most outspoken and kind of want to be center stage don't overpower and overwhelm and subdue the folks that may be introverted, silent geniuses that have a lot to contribute? How do you balance that out in your community?
Great question. I mean, that's great. Yeah, you're making a very thought-provoking, right? Because this is exactly what we have and what we see all the time in the group, right? And to your point about type A, like, it's hard. You know, a lot of our, especially our team, our staff, right, where like they're trying to, you know, interact with the membership, but like, hey, you got to remember these guys and girls are like, you know, they're true type A, like they're the boss and in their environment always. And so it's hard to kind of, you know, really break through in a meaningful way all the time, especially if you're not an existing founder, right? Like for us as members who also have ran businesses, right? Like it's a little easier because they're like, okay, this is someone that I can resonate with because we fought the same battles, right? But as far as like, you know, getting the most out of people who are introverted versus those, I think, you know, Eugene, our third partner who's not here, like he's done a great job, especially at our events, to kind of pull out what he can from those people. We do a lot of really good kind of, I guess they're icebreakers, right? Where everyone's meeting each other, like in a very intentional format where by the beginning of our events and stuff, everyone has already met everybody. So immediately the wall comes down a little bit. And so people feel a little bit more empowered. Like there was just a guy yesterday, one of the virtual masterminds we did, right? And he described himself as an introvert. And he said, finally, at our event felt like he had a place because people were asking him and we created these sort of round tables and everyone's like, hey, you're here, you have to contribute, right? So there's a layer of responsibility and accountability that we make everyone kind of partake in. And that forces a lot of people out of their comfort zone often, but they end up obviously, you know, getting a lot out of it when they're willing to kind of challenge themselves or what they thought, you know, the kind of person they thought they were.
Yeah, I can add to that too. I mean, just like our core values have really helped us with that because it allows everybody to identify who that person is that's maybe hasn't checked their ego at the door, right? Or thinks that they're better than others. We've had to remove people who can't, you know, follow what would mom say, right? You know, be respectful and, you know, have an integrity and whatever. Just because you're a great person or you sell a lot or, you know, you have big reach isn't an excuse. And so we really foster that relationship internally to make sure that the people that are here, they can raise their hand and stand up and provide more value and be center of attention. That's totally fine. But you got to do it in a certain way that actually is providing value. And in general, whenever you go to a conference, there's usually, if you look around the room, there's usually, you know, a certain handful of people who are talking a lot. And so when we bring in new people to our community, I kind of use the metaphor of like, hey, you're walking into a room of people you don't know. You can't just go and ask people, hey, can you help me with this? You know, you got to come in there with your best foot forward, give some value, start to interact, you know, hey, where are you from? What's up? Then you can start to extract value. Then you can start to, you know, find relationships. But we're trying to foster that value that like everybody here is proven. So everybody deserves some time. Like when you're at normal conferences, you don't know who you're sitting next to. That was one of my issues, you know, as we grew, I kept sitting next to people or getting invited to have dinner with a friend, teach them about Amazon and nothing would happen. And it was like, well, I'm wasting my time. This guy next to me, we spent all day, you know, building a relationship and, you know, he's just not going to be able to add value to me. That's not a bad thing. It's just, I wanted to like, you know, level myself up. And so by surrounding myself with people who are like-minded, I can, you know, understand that I'm not going to be the biggest person in the room or the smallest, but everybody here has value. And that's kind of how we have facilitated like that really good culture. That's really what it is, culture.
So if we have people that are listening to this that are considering an educational community, an entrepreneurial community. What are some of the biggest mistakes you've seen folks make when they join a community that leads to a quote unquote failure for them? Like what is the most common thing that people do that screws up their whole opportunity and doesn't allow them to succeed?
I think the expectation that like, hey, I punched my ticket, I paid my dues, give me what I'm here, you know, what I'm due, right? That sort of mindset is one that just doesn't resonate with the rest of our members, right? Because at the end of the day, it's all about the shared experiences and knowledge of each other, right? Again, we're not an education platform. So if you're going to lean on each other, it means you got to put in the work, you know, not to echo, you know, too much of what Ian was saying, but, you know, give more, get more is probably the most important value that we have, you know, core value that we have. I think, there's a interesting thing we plotted, like we award, you know, our most active members each month, they get an award. And there was a point in which I plotted these guys' growth on a map, on a chart, right? And I was like, wow, look, as a group, you know, wherever we're growing at like 40%, and these guys and gals who are winning these, you know, these awards for being active and adding value to the community consistently, they're on a like another level, right? They're going at 50-60%, right? So it's really interesting how that works, right? Because these are people who've dedicated obviously lots of time and effort and energy and in kind of investing in other people in the community by providing value. But something about it, right? Call it karma, call it what you will, but they're getting back many times over because it's very clear in their businesses that they're on a different growth trajectory. And so.
Yeah. And I'll add to that. It's like, how many times have you bought a course, right? And then you downloaded it and then you did nothing. And you just expected that that purchase was going to translate to your learnings. And then you don't take the time to invest in that course, right? I mean, I've done that numerous times. Or, you come in and you're like, give me. And it's like, that's not how it works. Yes, we have documents. Yes, we have resources. Yes, we have, you know, hundreds of hours of recorded content that you can watch, all of our hack calls, you know, mogul calls, expert calls, whatever, all that stuff. But if you don't take the time to do it, or you don't take the time to network, the networking is the shortcut, right? Like going to a conference, listening or watching a podcast or reading a book is a long way to get a little bit of information, but that little bit of information really, you know, can make, you know, big changes. So by talking to somebody and then distilling down that information, here's exactly how you should use influencers and what's working for me. Versus I'm going to take a 7-hour influencer course and then I'm going to get started, right? So it's really the shortcut. And to do that, you need to be able to interact and like build your relationship with those people. And so, that's the mistake I see people, you know, out there, like not choosing, you know, the right community to be a part of and understanding how the community actually benefits you, right? And then also like not being clear on your intentions when you join that community. So, you know, for us, it's not just about selling on Amazon. It's investing in real estate and making good stock purchases. It's life. It's how to lose weight. It's how to deal with family issues. We have different sections of our group to fulfill those needs of a community. But everybody has shared experiences, and that's really the most important thing is fostering that shared experience and having members that really just want to contribute to that, you know, that resource. And also sometimes I see that even putting down a paper and getting it out there and letting other people see it is actually a lot of value for yourself because you took the time to put that down and now you have a resource that you've created. You can share with your friends, your team, whatever. And so, you know, it does feel good when you actually contribute, you know, authentically to a community.
So let's talk about conflict. And this applies to, you know, anybody that's listening that wants to build a brand community, wants to build an education community, or maybe is a part of or thinking about joining an educational community. Now, the way my brain works is I hate conflict. I love everything to be hunky-dory. But when I, you know, imagine myself in a community of 600 people, there's going to be differing views. You know, specifically at MDS, there's going to be people that have different ideas of how they should rank and launch a product. And if you're expecting everybody to jump in and be helpful, you're going to have people that differ on their opinions. Right? You're going to hear conflicting advice. You're going to have, hard heads bumping heads with other hard heads. It's going to happen. As an example of, going back to Harley again, I know we're kind of beating a dead horse, but in this Harvard Business Review article, one of the myths is that, quote unquote, community should be love fests for the communities or for the faithful brand advocates, and saying the reality is smart companies and smart communities embrace the conflicts that make those communities thrive, right? So like an iron sharpens iron thing. Specifically to some of their examples here, they're talking about how PlayStation gamers hate Xbox gamers and Apple enthusiasts hate Microsoft and Dell and Androids. Dunkin' Donuts folks shun Starbucks, right? And on and on. Within your community, you want to consistently provide an environment where people can level up and where, you know, productive debate happens so that new ideas are brought in. So how do you try to balance this idea of healthy conflict without tearing apart your community?
For the most part, like, again, I think our core values and our culture prevents that from even happening. Yeah, there's disagreements. Yes, there are people that have different ways of launching. There's different political views, which we, you know, say, hey, can you take down that post? It's too polarizing. You know, we're not here to do politics. That's not what our community is about. It's really about leveling up your entrepreneurial mindset and your business. So, you know, we do have ways of like controlling that type of stuff. But in general, I think our culture, our community really monitors that. We don't have to do a whole lot of that, you know, at the level that we're at, right? When we had 100 members, there was a lot more opinions. Everybody thought that they were the spear, tip of the spear, right? And eventually, you know, we had to control that. You know, I had to make my own decisions, even though I ran it democratically in the beginning, like very much in the beginning, like, hey, what do you guys think about this? What do you guys think about this? Should I do this, right? Now it's like we take that advice through our advisory council, our member elected advisory council, but we, you know, we still make decisions based on what we think is best for the community, putting the group first, right? And then, you know, do we raise prices? Do we, you know, add this type of perk or extra and stuff like that? So, yeah, as far as conflict goes, I mean, we don't really have a whole lot of that. What we have is people who start to fall to the background, right? Because they're busy in their own lives, they have issues that they don't talk about. And so we try to help those people, you know, come back into the foreground and get re-engaged and get re-involved, because we value everybody's opinion in MBS.
Obviously, there is going to naturally be that. You know, it is fairly mitigated for as big as we are, for as much type A and polarizing viewpoints. But to your point, Tim, about like sometimes conflict is good because, you know, it creates, you know, kind of passion on both sides, right? And it creates engagement. And for us, we've had some topics that have arose in the community that were pretty polarizing, but at the end of the day, like we just have guardrails up, but we want the dialogue to continue, right? And we've found like some of these, you know, kind of hot topics are some of the posts in the group that have had the most comments, right? Because everyone's got an opinion and everyone's kind of battling for, you know, posturing for what they think is right in that specific, you know, topic or category. So, and as long as it doesn't get disrespectful, right? That's where like the line is crossed, where we've had to ask people like, hey, like make your point without saying, you know, without being condescending, or make your point without, you know, name calling, or let's say, right? But I think in general, it is healthy. It is healthy to have, you know, difference of opinions. And sometimes, you know, people think that like the bounds of morality and ethics are being crossed, but you know, that, you know, it's, who are we to really determine that, right? So
conflict is going to happen. New ideas are going to be brought in, which sometimes, you know, are good, sometimes are not. It makes me wonder how big a community should be. Now, Ian, you talked specifically early on about, you know, these niche communities. So a niche brand community, Harley, not just motorcycle riders. We're talking about, you know, education, you know, specific to Amazon, not just entrepreneurial. But where do we find that balance, or how do you see that balance landing between bringing in more ideas and more collaboration and more network versus getting too distracted and not focused enough and I don't know, losing value in the community because it's just too wide and too broad?
Yeah, I think, you know, people should join many communities. I think there's communities, I look at communities everywhere. So the way I see it is like, you should join a community and try to find out what the value is. Maybe it's not in education or a resource, but it's for your family or like the way that you want to live. You're surrounding yourself by people who, you know, you respect and that have, you know, done things that you are looking to do, right? And then like within like our community, you know, maybe this isn't a community for you forever, but it's a good community for you for right now. So whether you're, if you're just doing things on your own, you're in your own little world, you know, even if you're a doctor and you don't partake in all the doctor conferences, right? I was talking to my neighbor and, you know, he's like, well, you were on a 4-hour meeting. I was like, yeah, this is my like friends, my squad. Like we talk about things that are deep and it's not all business and it's not all fun, but I have to hear their stories. They have to hear mine, right? But there's so much value in hearing other people's struggles and stories that you can say, okay, I'm going to try and avoid that, or I'm going to learn from this experience. So, you know, whatever it is that you're doing, like we need to get out of our comfort zone. We need to get out of our office in our garage or our basement or our guest room and make connections that are real and authentic. And I think like that's really important. So yeah, whether it's a niche community or a big community, I think there's value in all of those, right? And there's even value in other communities in the Amazon space besides ours. But you know, there's different levels to those things, and we're trying to, you know, achieve the level where we can help you in many different steps of your journey, you know, and then some communities might be just, you know, I'm just trying to figure out how to launch product. This community is all about launching products, right? But you can go and do that course and join that Facebook group, but that's not being part of the community. Part of the community is actually investing time and energy into that and then getting value out of it. So to me, it's like, you really gotta, you know, not do this on your own and don't reinvent the wheel. I could go back to that. Just like find that community that's really your niche or what you're looking for right now and explore it as full as you can, you know?
So one of the things that keeps coming back up is this set of core values. You've mentioned it several times in the episode. A lot of the things like what you just described or maybe talking about conflict leads back into core values. For the folks that are listening, would you say that maybe the core values is what you look at when you're deciding to join a community, or the core values are very important in how you would form a brand community? Like, do core values really kind of become the central point of all of this in determining success or failure?
I mean, I think, yes. I think, you know, what I've learned in business is core values matter to your business, right? If you're starting a fitness brand, which I used to have, like, I didn't have core values. We just made products, right? Once you put core values behind it, then the whole company gets behind it. Then your you know, clients and your customers get behind it, right? If I was really deep in that business, I would have the core values about, you know, fit over whatever, right? And like, take care of yourself first. And it would be all about that kind of ideal, but distilling it into that like way where I think my company, people I hire, can get behind it, right? You know, quality matters, right? What ingredients matter, whatever it is. Because then your customers can also be a part of that. And everybody's looking to be a part of community. And they also are brand ambassadors. Like, you know, there's people that like different brands. You know, I like Lululemon or I like Adidas or Nike or whatever. Like you have an affinity to those particular brands. And it's not because like the price is good, it's because you like the quality, you like what the company's about, or you like how they support you as an individual. And like with MDS, it became this thing where it's like there was this time where people didn't like wear their brand. They don't share the, I mean, even to this day, like they don't really put their brand on their chest or their hat because they don't want people to know what their thing is. But I think MDS kind of unified it for them. It was like, oh, this is a brand that I believe in, that I would tell my friends to join, that I think that is really good. I have an affinity for it because I feel like this resonates with me, right? I'm a $1 million seller. And so that was like a changing point of going, oh, wow, I finally have a brand that people actually want to wear and support because it resonates with them. It's not about MDS. It's not about that. It's actually about what that brand represents, and they're proud to support it. And so when you put that behind your actual Amazon brand and start to tank it from this product that you found in China at a trade show, walking around the Canton Fair, to turning it into a brand, which I think you should do at a certain point in your journey, that's when people and your company and you'll be able to hire better. You'll be able to like inspire people better, and move the needle forward, and build a community around it. Right. And like, Nike has Just Do It. Right. That's like what people wear. They don't really wear the swoosh. Like that was branding. The Just Do It is like their culture. Like that's just get out there and do it. Right. Run that race, do that thing. And that's what people want to wear. And it really speaks volumes.
If you think about it, you're defining your identity, whether that's your identity as a brand, your identity as a community. So then if you now know what your identity is, because you have these set of core values, right? Then all your decisions within, you know, their day to day become a little easier, right? Again, to like, okay, well, you know, if we got to fire this person, you know, or if we're going to hire this person, right? Like we look at that, right? We got to remove this member. Okay, let's add this member, right? Here's the thing. We have this opportunity to do a strategic partnership with this brand or this software service. Okay, does it fit within our identity, our core values, right? So it just makes life a little easier when you can lean on that and not have to, you know, and have more confidence in the decisions you're making because you know that it aligns with what you've already decided who you are.
Makes complete sense. And for those of you that are listening, I know that that these two guys, you know, are talking specifically about their experience or leaning on their experience with an educational community, but everything that we've talked about applies also to brand community, right? So if you're thinking just on the brand community side, there's a lot of information and great wisdom, you know, baked into this episode. But I would also ask you to at least consider an educational community too. Every successful entrepreneur that I know, no matter what topic it is or what industry, they do better when they start aligning themselves with a network of folks that can help them level up, right? And help them level up by also contributing into that network. So consider that. If you are an entrepreneur and you're thinking about joining one of these educational communities or level up communities, lots of great information here. I'm familiar with the MDS group, and there's a lot I learned in here today about how they structure things or their core values that I was not aware of before. So all great information. Guys, if there's anybody that's listening to this that would like to find out more about MDS and what you guys have going on, whether it's to potentially become a member or just to learn more about how you've structured things, I assume that your website is the best place to do that, but throw out some locations or links here.
If you want to learn more about Million Dollar Sellers, go to milliondollarsellers.com. That's one great way. You can also reach us out on LinkedIn or Messenger, and we're always checking those as well. And you know, we are here to support you, whether we're the right fit for you or not. That's not the question. We're really here to see if we can help you.
Well, again, thanks, guys, so much for being on. I know it's time to wrap up. Lots of good information here, probably worth listening to twice because there's little nuggets. For any of you that appreciated, you know, what these guys are doing or found some value in this episode, make sure to leave us a review on whatever podcast platform you're listening to. If you're listening on one of the major audio platforms, make sure to jump over to YouTube and subscribe to the Growth Gear podcast channel, because when you're scrolling aimlessly, that will cause some little shorts and reels to pop up, which are probably valuable to you. And we're on all the major social media platforms as well. So thanks again, guys, for being on. Thanks for all of you that have listened to the end. And we'll see you guys on the next episode of the Growth Gear Podcast.